Warning. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Get on with it.
Yes, get over it! Yeah!
All right, folks. Well, we are the Nighthawks. I'm Trevor. That's Matt. We are in our conceptual diner talking about some of the movies we've watched recently. This is our What Have You Been Watching mini-episode. Find us on Stitcher, find us on Spotify, find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever good podcasts are caught. You can also catch us at NighthawksPodcast.com and at NighthawksPod on Twitter, NighthawksPod on Facebook, and you can find us on that little old Instagram as well. Matt, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
So, Matt, I know we usually have a pretty robust conversation around Oscar time with our Oscar czar, Cameron Maris, who is also 50% of the house band for the Nighthawks podcast, worth mentioning. Middle Class Joe is their... No, that's a lie. 19 Cent Feast is their name. Find them on Facebook.
Well, the conversation isn't going to be robust this year. I'm just going to give my picks and not tell why. Cameron's going to be like, what's the reasoning behind that promulgation there, Mr. Prejudigitator? And I'm going to be like, it's going to win because Stone Cold said so.
Well, I've been trying to keep up on the year's best movies. So that way, when Oscar time does roll around, I'm not caught in a cram session trying to get all these movies in before we have our conversation. So I was a little remiss because my gut says... we are going to be talking about these movies around Oscar time. I still reserve the right to do so, but I want to talk about them now because they're fun movies and I think people should watch them before Oscar time. So that way you can be the guy that said, I was into this movie before it was special. But Matt, you caught Everything Everywhere All at Once as well, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
This was one that played the festival circuit, got a lot of people excited about it. It is the mainstream big screen comeback for Ki-Hoo Kwan, the guy who played Data in The Goonies and Short Round in Temple of Doom. Michelle Yeoh, who is famous for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and a laundry list of martial arts films that are fantastic. You've got James Hong in here, the great character actor. This is a movie that embraces the idea of the multiverse and the kind of macro implications of our reality, but it is also very much about a family relationship. I am so glad I ended up watching this. I caught it way too late. I am late to this game. I will admit I am a Johnny come lately, but holy crap, this movie just tickled me no end.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's fun and dumb, but also completely serious and completely heart-wrenching, and it will teach you why you don't really put everything on a bagel.
I don't know if I want to attempt a synopsis on this. It is a hard one to explain, but it is a woman played by Michelle Yeoh who runs a laundromat in the United States. She's an immigrant and she is struggling with home life. She's struggling with work life. She's run into some serious tax problems. She has an antagonistic relationship with her accountant. And then all of a sudden she kind of is tapped into the idea of the multiverse and the many existences of this character across infinite realities, and when one folds over the other, how those can interact.
Mrs. Wang.
Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention.
Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going.
It does not look good.
What's happening?
Evelyn, I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. the memories, their emotions, even the skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
Don't make me fight you. I am really good.
I don't believe you.
It's really good.
Time, he's waiting in the wings.
The universe.
He speaks of senseless things.
Is so much bigger than you realize.
Just once, I'd like to see like a movie rule set where there is a multiverse, but there are only like five universes.
It's not infinite.
Like someone's like, oh, there's multiverses, and you're thinking like the character's like, oh, so can we just like bail on this one and go live in a different one because this universe is all Cronenberg's, like on Rick and Morty? Can we do that? Can we bail on this universe and just go to a different one where we're like already rich or something? And then the person has to be like, no, see, there is multiverses, but there's only five of them, and in the other four, like, you have like spongy feet.
Hot dog fingers.
Yeah. It's every one of the four multiverses that are the only multiverses that exist have something really wrong with them. Like, all food is circus peanuts. Or just like, there's like no Amazon in one of them. You have to go buy things at stores.
Oh, I thought you meant like the Amazon, the giver of oxygen and life.
That's number three. It's basically Mad Max. Do you want to live in Mad Max, Trevor?
I love Mad Max, Matt. I don't want to live in Mad Max.
Then the other one is it's a universe where you are a billionaire, but your wiener's small.
Well, here's what I will say for the multiversality of everything, everywhere, all at once. We have had a glut of multiverse stories lately. You brought up Rick and Morty. We had Spider-Man Home 3. Spider-Man can't find his home.
No Way Home.
No Way Home, which utilized the multiverse to get the three Spider-Man properties together. Doctor Strange used it to do some Evil Dead shit. Rick and Morty do it to explore weird existential quandaries and situations. You know, what if you just picked up stakes and moved to the next reality over where things were just askance enough that it's still your life and you take the place of the dead version of you that's buried in the backyard? That's a question Rick and Morty asks. That's not explored in Everything Everywhere All at Once. There is some of that here, but really it's just very deftly utilizing the multiverse idea to explore this very small, intimate story about a woman, her father, her husband, and her daughter. And the story itself is so damn touching that this is my favorite multiverse story that's come out in recent years.
Well, sir, that is blasphemy against the hit TV series Sliders.
I said recent years. I do have still a soft spot for John Rhys Davies and Jerry O'Connell. I actually own that first season in my Amazon library. That was a weird stoner purchase one night, but I don't regret it. From a technical standpoint, it's a beautiful movie. Just really well done, really well made. There are parts of this that are meant to look like a martial arts film, and they look like a martial arts film. There are parts of this that are meant to look like a contemporary domestic drama, and they look like a contemporary domestic drama, and then they meld the two in such a way that just so totally works that watching this movie was a visual treat on top of everything else.
If this wins Best Picture, will it be the Best Picture winner with the most butt plug kung fu in it?
I think that's a safe bet. Yeah, I bet that's true. We'll have to ask Cameron on that one.
God, now I'm worried he's going to have an answer.
Well, the other one that is waging a hell of an Oscar campaign... there's a hell of a windstorm going on outside my studio. I'm sure that's bleeding into the sound by now. But I will just ask our listeners to bear with me. But we are just, the movie we're about to talk about is so powerful and so driving that, you know, nature itself is banging at my very windows to try and get its word in about this film. But the other one we're hoping will be an Oscar contender because, man, they're just trying so damn hard. And I want them to be on that stage in some capacity. But this is the film from India, RRR.
We're just going to call it
RRR. And folks, I'm not kidding. Like, I am a latecomer to Indian film. I was a hard sell on Indian film. These movies are usually very long. They have musical numbers in the middle of them. Like, it is not a conventional American film. You are going to get something totally different when you're watching an Indian film. But folks, just trust me. Give me 20 minutes of your time. Go to Netflix if you have a Netflix account and just watch the first 20 minutes of this film, which is ostensibly the introduction of our two main protagonists here. And you will see some of the most bonkers shit I've seen in an action movie in a long time. You will see man versus tiger. You will see man versus entire crowd of other men. You will see elbows to the face. You will see bone-shattering combat. You will see acrobatics that can't be believed because they are so implausible, but they are so cool looking. And if that doesn't sell you on this movie, then maybe you can't be sold on this movie, and I'll take that loss.
Most importantly, Trevor, you'll see two people become brothers.
Yes, because this is the Indian bromance action adventure musical that the world needs right now.
Fire! Brace yourself for Ram.
This movie is bonkers and so much fun. For the sake of Cameron, our Oscar czar, who brought this up in our group chat, there is this weird frustrating thing that the United States distributors are doing with Indian films. They're dubbing them all into Hindi, which is not their original language, and I'm not going to pretend to be knowledgeable enough to parse the different dialects and different languages that are spoken around India. But Hindi was not the original track, and this is actually a multi-language film. It has that frustrating quality of being a dub, even though they're still speaking a language that the average US viewer isn't going to understand. So it has that frustrating Godzilla quality where their lips aren't quite moving to the words, and the dialogue track sounds like they're 3 feet in front of the screen. But the content of this film is dynamite.
I looked into this a little bit, and there's a problem where this movie itself is not actually in one language. And language barrier is actually a device in it, because there is a character that, like, and I'm probably going to get the exact transitive property wrong, but Komaram Bheem, he only has one language in common with the other character, and it's like one of them speaks Hindi and Tamil, and one of them speaks Tamil and English, and then the white people only speak English. And so it's like there's some kind of oddly stilted or repetitive dialogue in this that, and a lot of time what it actually is they're translating for each other or repeating things for the benefit of other people that don't speak both languages. There's actually some farce involved in that where they don't translate the insults because they don't want their friend to get in trouble for speaking his mind and stuff like that.
Right.
And so it's kind of challenging on that level. Fortunately, I believe you could mute the dialogue track and you would still be able to pick up most of what you need to know, which is that now is the time on Sprockets when we dance.
Not salsa, not flamenco, my brother. Do you know? Natu?
What is Natu? Polam gattu dummulo na potla gitta dookinattu polelamma jataralo potaraju ginattu kirru seppulesukoni karra saamu chesinattu marri sattu neelalona kurra gumpu koodinattu erra jonna rottelona milapa tokku kalivinattu na paata soodu na paata soodu naattu 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 veela naattu 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 poora naattu.
yeah, the track from this is fantastic. And I fully endorse, somebody tweeted this, and I think we even posted it to our page. But if the Oscars doesn't use the dance number from this, the Natu Natu song, as their opening number, it's money on the table. Holy cow, this is a... I have not walked away from a movie saying, holy shit, I wish I could dance like that in a long, long time. But man, this movie did.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some stuff in it that's very, like, if you walked into this in the middle in the wrong part, like there's a scene where one super bro whips the other super bro with a bullwhip, and it's a thorny bullwhip, and he can't whip him, like he's like in deep cover as a whipper, and if he whips him too light, he'll blow his cover, but he doesn't want to kill him. He's trying to like whip at 87% exactly, why his friend's resistance to being whipped brings him to tears, but he has to conceal the tears because he is a man, damn it. And what a mighty man he is. And like you were saying, the whole Southeast Asian film scene has different dramatic conventions, and they're not necessarily, I wouldn't say they're broader or necessarily lighter, but they are a little more like, I've said about like Chinese action movies and stuff before, that they're very, there's a particular type of Hollywood snark that is almost entirely missing from, you know, any Bollywood films, right? They have a slightly different sense of humor, and they have a slightly different sense of dialogue, the way like modern verite dialogue is a little different from 70s dialogue, and the way movie dialogue is a little different from a play. And there is a little bit of a challenge here, but like the unifying element of most of these films is that they are either very tragic or very action-packed or very romantic, or, you know, that like they lean hard into a lane. And frankly, it's a well that the American public is sleeping on. And when you go to a movie in India, you want to get like 3 to 4 hours for your money, and you want all 3 to 4 hours to be a good time, right? Triple R has like so galvanized the international movie going public that like if you look at like overseas shows of it, there's people dancing in the aisles and literally like kind of tearing the roof off the theater, you know. Like it's a remarkably fun movie. It has some preposterous action. It's got some wire work. They have some wacky weapons. There's a scene where Beam unleashes beasts on his enemies, like all the he's a mighty hunter, and so he unleashes all the beasts that he's been trapping for just such an occasion. Some real D&D comic book shit like that in it that is like, it should be dumber than it is how I'll put it. Like you're watching it, and the whole time you're like, huh, this kind of hangs together. This I'm in. You sons of bitches, I'm in. I liked it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Also worth mentioning, just because we just talked about a performance from this actress not too long ago on our Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade episode, but Allison Duty, the actress Allison Duty, making an appearance in Triple R. Allison Duty, a favorite of ours, Matt.
Yeah, she's a quality actress. It's nice to see her working again. And she's the heinous British first lady of the British, you know, colonial governorship. She's the governor's wife, and she's very vile. Like they play her like
that's the other thing. There is some straight political shade being thrown here, like to the point where there's actually a little disclaimer at the beginning of the film that says, this is not meant to represent any actual one person, you know, to avoid any kind of libel. But yeah, this is a big anti-colonialism movie.
The thing is that both of the people, like both of the main characters, are based on, they like have names and loose backgrounds in common with two actual Indian revolutionary figures. Like it's a little bit like they never provably met or worked together in real life. So it's a little bit like the adventures of Abraham Lincoln and Miguel de Cervantes. And it's complete alt history, the idea that they ever met each other. And the idea here is that, like, during the sort of dark period in their lives when they were, like, learning to be revolutionaries, what if they encountered each other and knew each other under their pseudonyms and became friends, and then discovered that, like, one of them's job was to arrest the other one, you know? And and then that internal conflicts arising thereof are mined for tragedy. And it's just a really fun, really, like, melodramatic, great action scenes.
And I will also say, very worth the 3-hour runtime.
Yeah, not a lot of, there's a couple, there's probably 10 or 5 minutes, a couple points where you can sneak to the bathroom, but not a lot of drag in it.
And I will say, if this is something you enjoyed, if this whet your appetite and you're looking for more, the same director, S.S. Rajamouli, made an Indian film that I love and I have championed for a long time, EGA. That's EEGA. Not to be confused with the Mystery Science Theater EGA, which is EEGAH. But EGA is a movie from the same director, and it's about a young man who is falling in love and everything's coming up Milhouse for him. And he is bumped off by a millionaire who fancies the same girl that he fancies. And this young man comes back as a housefly, is reincarnated, and wreaks his revenge as a housefly. Does a remarkable job doing it. This is a movie, if I'm going to sell you on one thing, this is a movie that has a fly training montage that cannot be missed. If RRR was something that you really enjoyed, and you're looking for something a little more confectionery, but with the same just over-the-top, melodramatic, big action scenes, but on a small fly scale, this is the movie for you.
Hey, this is TC.
And this is Jim from the Studio Demands It podcast,
where every episode we take a demand from a hypothetical studio,
which could be you,
and challenge ourselves to conceptualize, pitch, and craft a film based on the stipulations
or the demands
we are given. We talk about movies all the time. Particularly, we complain about the choices made in the films we've seen.
We're nerds like that.
And, of course, like any good nerd does, we automatically assume we could do better.
Even with the demands and restrictions that clearly must have been put on by a production.
So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com and listen to our previous library of episodes. Damn it. Our library of previous episodes. Our precious library, Jim. Our library of precious episodes.
You're a pirate, Smeagol.
Okay. So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com to listen to our library of episodes.
And submit your demand for a future episode, too.
So go do that.
Okay, bye.
Okay, end of ad.
Well, Matt, I did not see this one. You have, but it is another big Oscar contender. You caught The Banshees of Inisherin. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Close enough. Who could ever pronounce it right? I got a theory that they're just speaking normal American English, and they're just that drunk on this island. Because there is scarcely, I guess there's a couple breakfasts that don't involve any alcohol, but
This is Martin McDonagh, who probably best known, at least in this lane, for using the same two actors in the film In Bruges, but was a previous Oscar contender because he was also the director of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And so we've talked about this guy a couple of times.
She's robbed.
Yeah, that was a really good movie.
Call him Sonny Larry. Didn't you and he used to be the best of friends?
We're still the best of friends.
No, you're not.
Who says we're not?
Sit somewhere else.
Now, if I've done something to you, just tell me what I've done to you.
When you didn't do anything to me.
I just don't like you no more. You didn't like me yesterday.
Why does he not want to be friends with you no more? What is he, 12?
What the hell's going on with you, me feckin' brother?
He's dull, Siobhan.
But he's always been dull.
The other night, 2 hours you spent talking to me about the things you found in your little donkey shite that day.
Well, it wasn't me little donkey shite, it was me pony shite, which shows how much you were listening.
If you don't stop talking to me...
Colin!
And if you don't stop bothering me, I have a set of shears at home, and each time you bother me from this day on, I'll take those shears and I'll take one of my fingers off with them, and I'll give that finger to you until I have no fingers left. Does this make things clearer to you?
Not really, no.
Starting from now. But shush like, Polly. You know, shush like.
Yeah, I'd shush like.
But I have not seen The Banshees of Inisherin. Is this more In Bruges? Am I setting myself up for failure if I want another shot of that kind of movie?
I can't say it is another In Bruges. I will say that I think almost anyone that liked In Bruges would also like this. But it's not like a Haim and Haim situation where they're definitely rehashing the same people or anything by any other name, you know? But it is a lot of fun, although it is very dark in its commitment to like what's initially a very absurd premise. It is about two guys that are good friends, that they drink at the pub together every day, and then one of them just friends breakups the other one and won't say why. He's like, I just don't want to be friends with you anymore. Stop talking to me. Leave me alone. I've had enough of you. I don't want to be your friend anymore. Just stop. Just leave me alone. And it's like really strange because it goes very, very absurdist places and ends up kind of being like a long, like a really getting into things like just stubbornness and ego and, you know, consent to relationships and boundaries. And does it all in a very, like, very goofy way with very dark turns. And it's also set in, like, I think the Irish Civil War was going on. And or the run-up to one of the world wars. But they're off on this island and they're literally, like, watching battle on the mainland from the beach at times. It also has a, what's his name? The floppy kid from the Eternals.
You're asking me to remember the Eternals, man.
But his Colin Farrell's kind of alternative drinking buddy that he auditions when his real best friend stops hanging out with him is also a hoot. There's a lot of stuff like just the small town, like it has Northern Exposure vibes. Like it's a running joke that the postmistress opens everybody's mail and she hates one character in this because she never has any good, never has any cool mail and never wants to talk about what's in her letters. She just picks them up and leaves with them and doesn't share. And she's like, well, why should I gossip with you? You read the letters anyway. And she's like, well, I can't really act on the information if you don't tell me what was in them, because then everyone would know that I read them. It's super silly. It's very well written. And it does manage to like drive some points home while being very unlike anything else, except maybe In Bruges, right? So I give it a severed thumb up.
I'm gonna use my one book option here and plug a book. Since this is a new year, and over at oneofus.net, we did kind of a roundup of our favorite media of the year, our favorite television, our favorite movies. That's not posted yet. I don't know if it'll be posted by the time this comes out. Check that out over at oneofus.net, where Matt and I contribute a lot. But one of the pieces of media last year that just... It was very much a comfort, and I'm going to say it was a comfort listen. This is a book I consumed via audiobook during a time when I was doing a lot of traveling and a lot of waiting around in the hospital. My little guy was sick, and things were touch and go for a while. We were in a hospital out of town, and just searching for something nice and comfortable and something that would not stress me out, you know, because I'm a big mystery fan. I'm a big true crime fan. But if you're not in the right mood to be confronted with horrendous murder or, you know, what have you, if you're looking for something nice, that's what I was in the mood for. And so my usual books, my usual library wasn't cutting it. But last year, friend of the podcasters, Leonard Maltin, released his, I guess you would call this a memoir. He has an entire library of books under his name. Books on cinematography, interviews with filmmakers, his legendary film guide. He's got a book on the history of radio and old-time radio. But this is his kind of memoir about how Leonard Maltin became Leonard Maltin, one of the greatest film historians of our generation. What it really knocked home for me is that Leonard's just a guy. Now, Matt and I have been fortunate enough that we've got to spend some time with Leonard, and we know he's just a guy. He's a normal dude. He really loves movies. But being able to kind of witness through his eyes his own, well, I was just a really big fan of this actor, so I wrote them a letter and asked for an interview, and they said yes. And he started his own publication at an absurdly young age. He was a teenager when he was first publishing his own magazines, doing layout, editing, producing content. And all of these meet cutes that he has throughout his entire career, interacting with some of the biggest names and filmmakers in Hollywood from all eras. If there was a classic film star out there that he had access to, Leonard wanted to get in the door. He wanted to meet these people and collect those stories. And how much of it was just literally him asking. He wrote a letter. He waited outside the stage door after the play, you know, whatever. He heard they were shooting a film, so he went and hung out on the set and tried to get an interview. And I hold so much esteem for Leonard Maltin as a critic and a historian. He's been on countless DVD commentaries and presentations. Like, this guy is omnipresent in my life. He has been talking about movies to me since I was a kid, watching him on Entertainment Tonight. And to me, he is a celebrity. But to kind of hear him talk about himself as a regular Joe who was able to become who he is just through normal, I know a guy who knows a guy channels was really nice and inspiring. And hearing it as an audiobook was really, really comforting for me during a time when I was kind of at my wit's end. I was going through a lot of trauma. I inhaled Leonard Maltin, Starstruck. I don't know that I've actually said the name of the book yet. It's Leonard Maltin, Starstruck is the name of the book. And it was not a salacious Hollywood tell-all. He talks about some controversial people. And when Abel addresses the fact that there is a controversy, but doesn't get dishy about it. I think he talks about like one feud he has with Burt Reynolds, or maybe I'm remembering a podcast. I can't remember, but really it's a nice story about a guy who likes movies and made a career out of it. And that was just a wonderful little listen that I had.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I should try soothing things when I feel stress instead of the wad it up in a ball, swallow it and forget about it.
You know, it worked for me this time. Give it a shot.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone because everyone loves something. Podcasts post daily with subscriptions. You get video content as well. All are welcome because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.